Well, we hope you have had a good day, and what a beautiful, beautiful day it has been, and a busy day that it has been for so many. The ladies all came in with powdered sugar on their lips and licking icing off of their fingers. You know, they've been to the cookie exchange all day. So I'm guessing there may be a sugar rush out here, and I don't know. Somebody told me we're already over that, and we're in the valley now, so you may go to sleep on me. I hope not. But I think it was a big crowd at the, wasn't there, at the cookie, lots of cookies there. And men, maybe we have some that have been brought back to us. If not, I'm okay. I had a lot of them last night. Karen was making them 10:30 last night at the apartment, and I had more than I should have had, and I told Jonathan I realized it about 2:30 or 3 o'clock this morning when I was still laying there and hadn't gone to sleep. I was having my sugar rush, and I thought, I wish I hadn't licked that last bowl of icing in there. Would have been better not to have done that. Have you considered my servant Job? None like him on the face of the earth. That's what God asked Satan. And I would suggest and share with you that I believe that's probably good advice for us today. As we live in a world that has got a lot of hurt in it, a lot of pain in it, a lot of disappointment in it, a lot of things that we can't explain logically many times, pretty good advice. Have you considered my servant Job? Because Job was a man, as we've talked about, he was healthy, he was wealthy, he was wise, if you remember we talked about in the first lesson that we did together. And all of a sudden, he lost all of that. And he didn't know why. As we mentioned last week, Job, I'm sure, never read Job chapters 1, chapter 2. We've read that. We know why all these calamities came on him. He didn't know that. And he spends the whole rest of the story asking God for an explanation and asking God for some restoration. Make this right. Restore these things to me, or at least come in and give me some absolution in this. And he just doesn't know. He's struggling with, he's lost his family, he's lost his wealth, he's lost his health. And his three friends come to see him. And we talked about that last week. Eliphaz, Bildad, and Zophar. And they come, and when they got over the initial shock of how bad Job really looked, and they sat in 7 days of silence, just sitting next to his bedside, finally they opened their mouths and they started to speak. 8 speeches between the three of them. Eliphaz makes 3 speeches, Bildad makes 3, Zophar makes 2. 8 speeches. Really, 1 speech. Lots of verbiage, lots of illustrations. But they come in and they express themselves and they come to the bottom line of Job. Wicked people suffer. Good people, righteous people prosper. So we know everybody's always thought you were a good man. We always thought you were righteous. But evidently, there's something we don't know about. There's something hiding, looming in your life. And you need, they all offered the invitation to him. Like no gospel preacher did it any better or any stronger than what they did, particularly Zophar at the end. And he just said, you need to repent, confess, come clean, and maybe God will make all of this right. Well, Job didn't like that. In fact, he spoke the words that Floyd read to us a few minutes ago. He finally said, miserable comforters are you all. All 3 of you. You're not worth 15 cents as far as any help or any comfort or any solace. And he says, you're just full of wind. Will the wind never stop? all their long speeches. And he says, this sounds logical. Job says, you want to switch spots and you come be me and let me stand out there and assess you. I can preach to you the same sermon you just preached to me, because Job said, really, I agree with it. I agree with your logic. I agree that there are occasions when the righteous will suffer and when the wicked will prosper, but that's the exception. That's not the rule. The rule is God is a just God, and every time something happens, you solve it by reason. You solve it through logic. Job says, I understand all that. Only one problem. It doesn't fit me. That is not what has occurred here. And so he responds back to his three friends, and he tells them that he is justified in his complaining. He said, I have a right to complain. And he talks about his own suffering. And in response to their eight speeches, Job makes several speeches. And he has a lot of illustrations. And he's illustrating to them why he is justified, why he has the right to complain. To complain. Here are his illustrations. Number one, he uses the illustration of a sandbag, a bag full of sand. He says, if we, anybody, any human, had to carry all of the sand on all of the beaches in all of the world, and we had to carry that, the weight of it, on our backs, would we complain? It's a rhetorical question. He said, would we fuss about that? And the obvious answer is, well, yes, we would. And Job said, that's too much to ask any man to carry. God can do it. Man cannot. That's what Job said. So God is now expecting me to do something that man cannot do, but he's expecting me to react the way he would react. Here's what he said, chapter 6, verses 2 and 3. Oh, that my vexation were weighed, all of my calamity laid in the balances. It would be heavier than the sand of the sea. So that's his first illustration. Number two, he talks about an ox and the sound, the lowing sound that an ox makes. Job says a cow moos and an ox lows, and they do it when they're hungry. You don't have to tell them to do it. You don't have to motivate them to do it. They're programmed to do it. When they're hungry, a cow moos and an ox lows. And he says, whenever a man has this kind of pain, this kind of suffering, he says it's just as natural for a man to complain when he's suffering as it is for an ox to low when it's hungry. Verse 5, chapter 6. Does the wild donkey bray when he has grass, or the ox low over his fodder? Of course he does. He's hungry. That's natural. The third illustration he gives is what I'd call the Weight Watchers diet. The Weight Watchers diet. Job asked the question, can that which is tasteless be eaten without salt? He said, no. No. You can't hardly get it down if you put a lot of seasoning on it. And he raises the point that in the same way food and salt go together, he said, so do suffering and complaining. They go hand in hand. Fourth, he talks about what we would refer to as a robot. Robot. Chapter 4, verse 5, if you'll remember, Eliphaz accused Job of being impatient. We always think of the patient Job. James refers to it as the steadfastness of Job. Well, Eliphaz said he was impatient. Job admits it. He says, that's right, I am impatient. And you'd be impatient too. if you had to put up with what I have to put up with. And he says that stones or bronze might handle it. That's a machine. That's a robot. But not a human with flesh and blood. Verses 11 and 12, chapter 6. What is my strength that I should wait? What is my end that I should be patient? Is my strength the strength of stones? Or is my blood bronze? He said, I'm not made of bronze and stone. I'm a human. Then he talks about a slave. A slave. And his idea is that a man gets tired, a person gets tired from working all day, and we like to get under a shade tree and rest. And Job says, is this wrong? There's the rhetorical question again. Anything wrong with that? No. You get tired, you want to rest. Then he talks about a soldier. He says a soldier longs for his wages. Job says the wages of a suffering man is the right to complain. The right to complain. Chapter 7, verses 1 through 3. He says, has not man a hard service upon earth? Are not his days like the days of a hireling? That's a soldier. Like a slave who longs for the shadow, and like a hireling, a soldier, who looks for his wages, so I am allotted months now of emptiness, and nights of misery are apportioned to me. Months worth. See, the timeline in Job may be different from what we initially perceive. I was ugly enough to say about Job's wife, if you go back and look at it, Satan, when he came in and was trying to make life rough and tough for Job, he took his kids, took his whole family, took all of his livestock, took all of his wealth, said, but he left Mrs. Job in place. If you look at it, it came clear to me why. She hounds him. She nags him. She was worth more to Satan alive than she would have been to take her away. She's the one who finally said, curse God and die. Now, to come back in and be a little bit more understanding and compassionate for Job's wife, we learn right here in chapter 7, verses 1 through 3, Job has suffered for months, before his wife told him, suggested to him, you ought to curse God and die. She didn't do that the first day. She didn't do it the second day. And she watched him suffer like the friends who didn't even recognize who he was because of the extremities of the suffering. It was an act of love. It really was. I'm convinced of that. When Job's wife finally told him, just curse God and die. She had watched her husband suffer so long. She said, I can't stand to see you suffer any longer. So why don't you do it? So I really think it was an act of love. Number 7 illustration. Job talks about the brevity of life. This is how he's responding now to his friends. And he said, life is just flat too short to suffer the way I'm having to suffer. And he gives several illustrations pertaining to the brevity of life. Number 1, he talks about a weaver's shuttle. That's in verse 6, chapter 7. It says, my days are swifter than a weaver's shuttle and come to their end without hope. He's depressed, despondent. He talks in verse 7 about a breath. He says, remember that my life is a breath. My eye will never again see good. Now, folks, that's getting down to a depressed state. I'll never see anything good again. I'll never see anything positive again. He talks in verse 9 pertaining to the brevity of life about a cloud. He says, as the cloud fades and vanishes, so he who goes down to Sheol, that's the grave, does not come up. Job is saying, if you die and you're buried and you go to the grave, you will not come back to earth. That was a positive to him at this point. Why would you want to come back, Job said? Why would you want to come back to all of this suffering? We're going to deal with that when we get to chapter 14. That's the question Job's going to ask of God, and we're going to deal with it then. But he's to the point right now. He's saying, I want to die, and one of the good things about dying is I will not come back. I won't have to face this any longer. He talks, under the brevity of life, about a mail runner, post runner. My days are swifter than a runner, verse 25. They flee away. They see no good. Talks about a long boat, a skiff of reeds, what is an old translation said. It's a long boat built to zoom across the water. An eagle, he talks about, swooping on the prey, verse 26. They go by like skiffs of reed, that's the boat, like an eagle swooping on the prey. He talks about a flower. He talks about a shadow. Both of these go by in a hurry, the brevity of life. Well, then Job kind of shifts gears. And he tells his friends, there's a second reason that I have to suffer. And the second reason I have to suffer is because I've got such sorry friends. That's the other thing that I'm having to deal with right now and work through is he says, you have let me down. You came to comfort me, but when the fat was in the fire, you let me down. And he compares the friends, the three friends, to a wadi. You say, what's a wadi? Well, that was an Old Testament term which talked about in the land of Palestine, there were rivers that would overflow its banks in the wet season. But in the dry season, they'd be bone dry. And so they were deceptive. They were deceptive. It looked like it was beautiful bodies of water. But then when the hot summer came and you needed that water, it was just dried up land. He said, that's the kind of friends that I have. You heard of fair weather friends? That's what Job accused them of being. He says, he who withholds kindness from a friend forsakes the fear of the Almighty. Job indicates there is a relationship between the fear of God and how we treat other people. Catch that? He who withholds kindness from a friend forsakes the fear of the Almighty, fear of God. My brethren, Eliphaz, Bildad, Zophar, they're as treacherous as a torrent bed, as freshets that pass away, water that passes away, which are dark with ice and where the snow hides itself. In time of heat, they disappear. When it's hot, they vanish from their place. The caravans turn aside from their course. They go and there's no water there, and so they perish. They're disappointed because they were confident. They thought they knew where water was, but they come thither and are confounded. Notice that Job is saying it's not what they did say that's irritating him. He agrees with what they said. He just said, it doesn't apply to me. That's what's making him mad. That's what's frustrating him. It's what they didn't say. It's what they didn't say. And again, there's a connection between the fear of God and showing kindness, compassion to men, to women. God made man in his own image, and God loves man. And if I'm made in God's will, then I'm going to love people. Because that's what God does. And I'm supposed to be in his image. They were fair weather friends. So that was the second thing he said that I've got to deal with right now. I've just got a sorry bunch of friends. Thirdly, he says, I'm complaining because God is causing me to suffer. It's God's fault. It's God's fault. Number one, his complaints about all the food without salt, etc., and the cows mooing and the ox lowing, that was natural responses. That's just the way we're programmed, he said. Second one was, I got a bunch of lousy friends. Third now, he says, God's making me complain because God is causing me to suffer without what Job classified just cause. See, we talk about that in the courtrooms today. Just cause. Job talked about it here in the book of Job. He said, God is creating all this and he's allowing all this without just cause. God's put me in a cage, he said, and put a guard over me. And he said, I can't get a moment's peace. He says, therefore, I will not restrain my mouth. Yeah, I'll complain. I will speak in the anguish of my spirit. I will complain in the bitterness of my soul. Am I the sea or a sea monster that thou settest guard over me? He's saying, God, why are you spending so much time worrying about me? Why are you creating all these problems for me? I'm no monster. When I say my bed will comfort me, my couch will ease my complaint. You ever get to that point? I believe if I could just lay down and get me some rest, get me some sleep, things would be better. He said the bed, the couch, they don't work. I lay down and he says, then you scare me with dreams, terrify me with visions, so that I would choose strangling and death rather than my bones, rather than being alive like I am. I loathe my life, Job said. I would not live forever. Leave me alone, for my days are a breath. What is man that thou dost make so much of him, and thou dost set thy mind upon him, and visit him every morning, and test him every moment? Job said, I can't get any relief, God, from you. Leave me alone. I'm not important enough for you to be down here picking on me like this. You say, well, that's not a very good way to talk to God. And you're right. You're right. But I'm going to suggest to you, it's not all bad either. Job had a relationship with God, and we see this with some of the other biblical personalities that we read about. He had a relationship with God that was close enough and pure enough that he could level with God right where he was. Can you do that? Can you get angry at God sometime and say, God, this is what I'm feeling right now? Doesn't mean it's right. Job wasn't right. Doesn't mean that it's truth. What it is, though, I think one of the good things about Job and one of the things that God liked about him was that he had a relationship with God in so much as he could level with God and tell God what he was really, really feeling. You say, well, how can you worship a God like that? How can you worship a God when you're suffering and it's not apparent why you're suffering and you can't figure out why you're suffering and it appears like God's creating part of it and God's not logical and you can't figure out what the next move's going to be with God? How can you worship a God like that? How can you marry a person like that? Let me ask you that. Can you? Can you marry a wife, a husband, and love them when they sometimes do things you don't expect? When they don't always respond the way you think they ought to respond? How do you marry someone like that? How do you raise kids like that? Can you stand to have children who disappoints you? Can you get through the child rearing process for a child that is unpredictable? Of course. Of course. Then why can't we worship a God that sometimes acts differently from what I think He ought to act? God is more complex than the creation. I'll say that again. God is more complex than the creation or anything in the creation, than you and through me. We got to let God be God, and then we respond to Him accordingly. Our response has got to be a faith believing that He has a reason and a plan, even if I can't figure it out. Paul writes to the Romans and he says, all things work together for good to them that love the Lord. He never said all things are good. He said God works all things together for good. Joseph, we talked about in our Bible class this morning, Joseph, who his brothers sold him into slavery, into bondage down in Egypt. Then he becomes the number two man in Egypt through a grain storage program that he convinced Pharaoh to be involved with, and everybody had to come there for grain, including his family, including his brothers. And when they had that recognition and that reunion of who he was and who they were frightened, they were feared for their lives. Joseph told them, relax, relax. You meant it for harm. God used it for good. We need to be able to have a faith that holds on, that sustains us, even when we cannot figure it out, when we cannot explain it. What's the difference between Job's ideas and his three friends' ideas? Well, they all start at the same point. That point, again, is God causes evil to suffer, righteous to prosper. However, Job says, what y'all need to understand, friends, God is not acting like God is supposed to act. If He were, I wouldn't be in this mess. Job says, you guys have been arguing again about God's power and His wisdom, and you're not smart enough to realize that I believe that. I believe God has all power and all wisdom. Job says, my question is, how does He use it? And Job is to the point right here in the book, in the story, that he has come to a conclusion that God uses His power to crush him personally. And He uses His wisdom to make Job look bad to people around him. You say, well, how in the world did he get to that point? Same way we do today many times. We make statements like God would not let a good man's house burn down. How's this happening? Surely God wouldn't allow somebody to fly two airplanes into the World Trade Center and thousands of innocent people be killed. Surely God, as we talked about in our sermon this morning, would not allow good-intentioned, sincere, good, moral people to be lost. See what we do? We derive, we come up with a concept of God, whether it's an advanced concept or not, but it's one that we come up with in our minds. And we say, this is how God's supposed to act. I've thought it through. I've reasoned through it. And as I said last week, we draw a box. Your box may be bigger than mine. may be shaped different from mine, but that's your concept and my concept and Job's concept of God. And everything goes along just real fine unless God steps out of my box or steps out of your box. And then we say, this isn't right. This isn't fair. And we start making our defense. We can't box God in. We're not that smart. The Creator is more complex than the creation. And I think the theme to the whole book of Job, and I've said this each week, and I'm say it till we get done, it all boils down to this. Can a person, a man, a woman, a boy, a girl, still worship God, maintain their faith in God, even when it seems they have every reason in the world not to? Job had every reason in the world not to. He believed. And as he made his defense to the friends, it's because the biggest point, he had a 3-point sermon. Logical. This is natural response. My friends are sorry. And God is not acting like God. His third point was his major point. That was where he was really driving it home. And he's just saying, God is making me suffer without cause. Verse 17, chapter 9. He says, he crushes me with a tempest and multiplies my wounds without cause. Without cause. He's not acting the way God is supposed to act. Now, Job, we're going to finish the study. And Job's going to come around. You remember we said in chapter 1 and 2, says that in all these things that happened, Job did not sin, chapter 1 said. Chapter 2 says he didn't sin with his lips. And I suggested to you, wonder what he was thinking. We're starting to see what he's thinking. And we're going to get over to the last chapter, and he's going to repent in dust and ashes. So something happens between chapters 1 and 2 in the last chapter, and that is he sins. And he's struggling right here, and he's coming to some conclusions that are not valid conclusions. But he's struggling with this thing of, can I hold on to my faith even when I seem like I've got multiple reasons not to? He asks over and over, why? And he's never told. Throughout the whole book, we're going to finish this up, and he's never going to get an answer to that question. The point of the book, the point of the story, can you maintain your faith even when it seems like you've got every reason not to, and you're never given a logical, reasonable reason that you accept of why it happens? Have you considered my servant Job? You may be suffering tonight. You may be hurting tonight. You may be struggling in your faith, saying it seems like it's just not right what's happened to me the last week, the last month, the last year. This has been a hard year. For a lot of people, it has been a tough year, 2017 has. I would suggest to you we listen to the suggestion that God gave Satan. Have you considered my servant Job? And we're going to continue to consider him and see how he comes out of this at the end. But tonight, if there's anything we can do to help you, if you're suffering, if you're struggling, we want to do it. And we invite you to come as we stand and as we sing.
Oh, do not let the word depart and close thine eyes against the lie, for sin